Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. Colorado has two types of topography, high, flat, rolling lands and the Rocky Mountains. The result is snow and plenty of it. Keeping Colorado's 23,000 lane miles of highways open to traffic in winter is a huge challenge. To learn how it's done and the role of technologies in the process, we're talking with Kyle Lester, who's Director of Maintenance and Operations for the Colorado Department of Transportation. Glad to be talking with you today, Kyle.
Great to speak with you.
How much snow do you get in the mountains in the winter? It's got to be a lot more than we get here in Chicago area.
There's areas that get over 500 inches a year. Creates a great challenge. Our crews are always getting very focused and look forward to that challenge every year.
And so, I can see that they would get excited about it. It's a main mission, and it's really critically important for the community and the society. What roads is the state responsible for? So you have the interstate highway system, I assume, but many other smaller roads.
Correct. We oversee operations, maintenance and operations on all interstate, state routes, and U.S. highways. In Colorado, we do not oversee the local roads, local city streets, or the county roads, the county road network.
A lot of those roads, a lot of those miles are in the mountains, I assume.
Yes, I'd say about a third of the network is in what you would consider characterized as mountain terrain.
And that's where the heaviest snow falls?
Absolutely. Snowfall, wind, some of the most extreme weather in North America.
What about bridges? Are bridges a special problem?
Bridges, because we all know they freeze up before the rest of the roadway, they are a point of concern, a focus point of our operation, especially in a lot of flyovers on the interstate system. We have to maintain a special awareness to the temperature, surface temperatures on the bridge decks.
So are you using remote sensing to collect the data?
Yes, we use weather stations with friction sensors. We're really moving more into use of stationary friction sensors and mobile friction sensors to detect freezing conditions or when we're on the cusp of freezing surface conditions.
So when you say mobile friction sensors, I assume that means that they're on one of your vehicles.
Yes, right now we have like 51 or 52 mobile friction sensors mounted on supervisors' trucks. We are testing a couple, I think we have six mobile friction sensors on plow trucks.
And what do you do with the information? That is, if you find the road is particularly slippery, the friction is low, do you deploy resources to address that?
Supervisors have been trained to understand what those values coming out of the friction sensors, what they mean, and they're starting to learn the lessons or learn how to utilize that data into their operations and deploying resources.
So do the supervisors, so you said these sensors are on supervisors' vehicles. Do they have an in-vehicle readout of the condition, or does that go to central office?
Both. We made sure that in the vehicle, that system's operational, so supervisors can see in real time those friction readings. And then we also monitor that through our MDSS system. Everything is an API sent to our maintenance decision support system, and then we're monitoring that more in a central office capacity.
And does that affect the way you deploy ice melting vehicles?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's important that the supervisors have that in real time because the latency between when it loads into the system and back to us in a central office capacity viewing those values, you could see 5 to 10 minutes. And in a freezing rain event or right at that critical freeze point time of any storm, that latency could be is critical, that time lag. So having the system in the vehicle where supervisors can see it in real time and understand and then deploy resources based off the information they're given in the system.
And do you have the capability to send that information back to drivers so they know what's ahead in their immediate area?
We're working on that. There is a screen and a system in every plow truck. Right now, we're trying to balance that toggle between, is it too much information in a plow truck when the driver's supposed to be paying attention to the roadway as opposed to data that's coming in. So we do have an interface with the driver in the truck, but we're pretty cautious of how much information we want to flow that way in real time. We're leaving it right now more supervisor directing the operations through radio communications with the drivers.
So tell us about the mobile resources you have out there, the trucks and tractors and plows. How many, what kinds of equipment are you using?
So our standard plow truck is a tandem axle plow truck. We have just about 970 deployed statewide. The majority, I don't say all of them, have wing plows on them. We're working towards, that's our standard build now, is the truck has a right wing plow and a front plow on every truck with a combination unit, both liquid and granular product for spread in the back.
And the driver controls what gets spread?
Correct.
And when you talk about a wing plow, the image I have is that, so it's on the side of the truck, and it allows the truck to clear a wider path and perhaps move that snow completely off the roadway.
Yes. So on a standard two-lane road, 12-foot lanes with a shoulder, it can clear upwards of 15, 16 feet with that wing plow.
So presumably two passes and you've done the job if you can get ahead of the snow.
Yes, on a two-lane road. In interstate highways, our standard practice is, or multi-lane highways, our standard practice is to run in echelon. So we'll have 2, 3, 4 vehicles running in echelon to clear the...
So single pass, yes. Okay, so very similar to what you see on clearing airport runways. So you could clear a very wide swath in one shot.
Past few years, we've also deployed tow plows, which will allow us to plow two lanes at a time. So the tow plow is a trailer mount towed vehicle that articulates out, and right now all of ours articulate to the right, so it'll clear the lane that the driver's in and then the adjacent lane to the right.
And is that towed device, is that unpowered?
It's unpowered, but it does have a liquid application and granular application on the trailer.
So it has some storage capacity on this trailer?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen them, but I've seen pictures of them, and it looks like that's becoming more common.
Yes, we have currently in the state, we have 32 deployed. I took a pause last year from buying more. We were buying about 10 a year, and then I took a pause last year just to make sure that they are fully integrated into our operations and utilization is high on those units.
So one of the things that we're curious about is how does the driver stay on the road in a heavy snow situation, in a whiteout situation where the rest of us can't see the road?
Well, there's a bunch of technology, different technology, one that Alaska use and Caltrans deployed on Donner Pass, Alaska on some of their significant passes using GPS. In Colorado, we haven't deployed any of those technologies as of yet. We do have some conditions on our mountain passes that would warrant putting in the technology. So we're considering that. Right now, the methods are pay attention to delineators. We have double delineators, really improving our signage or delineation of the roadway.
And so if you're looking ahead to a GPS-based system, I would assume that an issue is cost of acquisition and installation.
Yes. Yes.
Is the map database that you would have, is it up to standards? That is, you would need a very precise map database if GPS is going to really do you some good.
Currently, our maps are. The issue is, again, the latency, the lag time between the information going to a system and then back into the vehicle. If you're using GPS or GIS technologies, there's always a lag, which won't help you in that scenario of trying to stay on the road. So in Caltrans, California, they put in pucks in the road, and you follow the pucks. The Alaska system is a combination of that. So we're looking at looking at those technologies, trying to understand the if we can improve the latency between the information and getting it into the truck. We're looking at all those different options.
Yes, and I would assume that the places where you need this kind of technology are mostly concentrated in the mountains.
Correct. All of our mountain passes where we, there's a few highways where we have extreme blowing snow on the eastern plains also that this technology would help with.
Is there anything else that you do to address this extreme blowing snow other than paying attention and keeping your vehicles out there?
One thing I've been pushing over the past few years is the concept of if we're struggling to stay on the road or visibility is poor in that type of environment or that situation, I've been pushing that maybe we're doing a disservice to the public by having them out there. So more closures, and I know that's an unpopular thing amongst travelers, but there's times when we just shouldn't, if we can't be out there operating, the average person, traveling public, shouldn't be out there either. And so we watch our weather. We have a staff that just watches, that works closely with NOAA, that watches all of the weather elements. Wind is a particular one. So amount of snowfall with wind, that combination in very specific areas that are historical problems, the segments of highway, we know we'll go into a proactive closure on those segments.
Do you have permanently installed gates on your on-ramps?
For the most part, I'd say we have to improve that and expand that. As we move into more proactive closures, we have to come work into more of that permanent or that setup where it's easy to close the road. So we have a couple gaps in our closure gates currently.
Are you doing anything special for avalanche control?
Absolutely. We have technology. Over the past 5 years, we've been deploying technology statewide to move away from the use of explosives for mitigation.
And to move away from explosives, so then what do you do as an alternative?
So we've deployed on Loveland Pass, Berthoud Pass, Monarch Pass, we've deployed a GASX system with exploders. That's a propane oxygen mixture. I reference it as a kind of a big barbecue igniter. It creates that explosion and to detonate, that detonation triggers avalanches. We've started moving into on some of the other passes where there's more of a single chute that we can cover is a system called an Obelix system with self-contained shots. That same concept as a GASX system, but it's self-contained and kind of looks like a half dome egg kind of shape thing. All this technology is detonated through a computer system, secured computer system. So there's no use of there's not any high explosives, and they're high risk to employees and the public in those scenarios.
But these are deployed. These are installed at the point where you would expect an avalanche, right? You're not shooting at it from 3 miles away.
No, it's on the ground. They're permanent installations on the slope above.
And they're controlled from where? From locally or from a district office?
No, locally.
Okay.
We always want to have eyes on the slope.
Yes.
So we have positive control of anything that might be on the slope.
And when do you implement? When do you use these? I mean, is there eyes on the slope that says now we need to do it, or are there some other criteria that you apply?
We've built a system through the years where we have actual avalanche forecasters that are responsible for zones and certain segments of highway throughout the state. They pay attention to the snowpack. They dig snow pits, looking at the slope stability and snow stability. And they make recommendations to our supervisors and managers when mitigation is needed.
But so, again, it's a matter of having somebody literally on the scene that's observing and taking data to drive your decisions.
Correct.
Okay. So going forward, what are the technologies that you when we call you back in 5 years, what do you expect to be using? What do you need that needs to be developed?
Well, everything, I think industry-wide, everything's kind of moving in the right direction as far as technology and deployment of that technology. I think we're at a stage now where it's improvement of that technology. So when you say development, I'm not so sure that there's new things that necessarily need to develop. The current things like the friction sensors and our AVL systems, they need to improve. Our connections to the snowplows, more real-time, the software systems that read and bring that data in and analyze the data in real-time, the latency is probably the biggest thing to really make an impact. So those systems need to improve. The network needs to improve. That's what I'm seeing. That's some of our gaps. We've deployed, I think, about 108 stationary friction sensors, and then we have the 52 mobile sensors, plus another six or so that are in a pilot project on plows. We have lots of data that comes in, but sometimes data can be overwhelming. And so we got to make sure that we have an operating system, a user interface with that data, and that the data has to be in real time. In a winter weather environment, working with this data, you can't have a latency of 10 minutes where it goes to servers in some office or some network and then has to bounce back. 10 minutes is critical. That lag is critical. So I think developing forward, we have to reduce the lag time in the data coming in and continue to develop the software systems to analyze and process the data, algorithms that can read it, that can allow us to work with the data.
So better use of the data, deployment of technology that's already there, and incremental improvement fundamentally to speed things up. Sounds like that's a good agenda for the future.
Yeah. I'm working on a project now. I call it real-time route optimization or dynamic route optimization is some of the terminology I've been using. But a lot of states are using route optimization. But when you say that, it's kind of, I call it the UPS, you know, no left turns type of technology. You analyze your routes before the season, and then that's the route. Well, it really doesn't take into consideration traffic incidents, doesn't take into consideration current traffic patterns or weather patterns from storm to storm, day to day. What I really want to build going forward in the future is inputting all of that data into a system so that I can give feedback to a driver as they're on the road. The example I use to illustrate this is when we have a traffic incident, we have a traffic accident, and we're starting to queue about 2 miles of traffic, and I have on an interstate highway, and we have an echelon of four plows. I really don't want those plows to get caught in that back of queue accident, because then they're sitting for hours trying to fight their way through that queue of traffic. I'd rather get them some information to get off at this next exit, and we'll reroute you a different way.
So you want dynamic, real-time control of the fleet that's you have deployed.
Correct.
Sounds like an operations research problem. Are you working with anybody in the universities on that?
We're working with a few consultants to help us with this. So some of the initial steps in this was you have to actually kind of do a static route map. You know, here's the most efficient route, maybe A, B, and C options of that efficient route, right? What are all the indicators? What are all the elements from each, why you would choose this route over this route? So you need to kind of set all of that and load that information, that data into a system, and then figure out what are the elements that would make you toggle between this route or that route. Plus, then you have to add in the traffic incidents, current weather patterns, and build that algorithm that would feed back to a driver to change their routing. Routing and or treatment practices,
yes.
What are their applications? What products are they using? Should we be using a dry product as opposed to a liquid product because of blowing snow, different things like that?
So a lot of decisions to model to help you manage better, but it sounds like that would make a better future for road users. Kyle, I'm really happy I got a chance to talk to you today, and I appreciate your time, and I appreciate your good work to keep the roads open. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, take care. Bye.